Yes, guys, what's good? You're tuned into Mango Masala, Pi Radio South Asian show. My name's Gaines. I'm here with Halima.
Hey, everyone.
And yeah, wouldn't be a Mango Masala episode without a little bit of technical difficulties at the start, but
we're here now. We're here, guys.
We're here. That's what matters. Most importantly, Halima,
I'm here. Unfortunately, I mean, not unfortunately that I'm here on the show. I've missed it. I've been looking forward to being back on the mic. Mm. But unfortunately, I am in the country. It is that time again where I just sit here and I lament the fact that I went away and now I'm back.
Yeah, you know what? First thing she comes in and says, oh, I'm tired. I'm like, right, like you haven't just been gallivanting for how many weeks?
I mean, it's tiring.
To be fair, holidays are always kind of sold as like this time off where you're meant to kind of have a bit of relaxation. You're meant to come back re-energized, but often that isn't the case because you end up trying to do too much.
I think there's two types of holidays. Like, I always say this, I rarely go on holiday, but like I travel. You know, there's like there's a big difference.
That's a good distinction. Yeah.
You know, like there's, because you go on holiday, I think it's kind of like just being at an all-inclusive or a resort somewhere or just somewhere nice and relaxing and you don't really do much but kind of like lounge about. Mm. Whereas me, I'm like, I'm trying to see the world, guys. But anyways, I'm back and it's, you know what it is? It's like, you know when you're away for long, I was there for like 3 to 4 weeks. So you know when you're like away for a while and then you come back and then initially, because I do miss home while I'm away. I miss my home comforts, you know? So it's like the first 2 days, like you eat your mum's food, you sleep in your own bed, you shower in your own shower. And like, I've been home for about 3 days now. And I've had that. I've had those few days of like being happy to like be in my own space and have my own kind of like home comforts. And now I'm at the point, literally last night, it hit me like a truck. Where I was like, oh my God, I need to leave again. I need to go. Like,
almost like this is your holiday kind of thing. You want it to be like you're permanently out there. And that it's just you come back home
to relax
for a couple of
days. Exactly, that's so true. Like, yeah, I don't know. But it's gotten to the point now where it's like, so I also turned 20, beep, redacted while I was away. 28, we've spoken about this. I turned 28 and like, I kind of said to myself, like, this trip would be kind of like, not the last, obviously I'm still going to go away, but like, because I travel quite consistently, I said to myself, like, this would kind of, I would come home and I would like get my ish together. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's what I've been telling myself, but, oh, it's just so hard.
Yeah, 3 days in, having to face the reality of, okay, now
have to get my stuff together. And now I'm like, no, I want to go. But it's gotten to the point now where my family and my friends are like, stop running. Like, just sort yourself out.
Why are you running?
Why am I? Oh, many reasons.
I think that is a common thing, though. I think we like to fantasize in our heads about these idealistic ways that things are going to go when it comes to organization and priorities and just getting your ish together, and then it's all like, yes, I'm gonna do this and right, it's gonna be this, and then when it actually comes to it, it's like
so hard.
You actually have to,
but I feel like this is what I'm realizing, like the older that I'm getting, I'm realizing like you actually really have to build the life that you want. Like, I think when you're a young adult, things, you're just in a kind of like a very more time in a kind of formulaic kind of life path. Like, you go to school, you go to uni, you get a job, whatever. And then it gets to a point where, like, you've done all of that or the options aren't really satisfying for you and you kind of have to sit there and realize, like, cool, where do I get my purpose from? And this has gone really deep, but it's so hard. It's just such a difficult place to be in.
Mm.
But I had a great time away, guys. I went to Dominican Republic, I went to Puerto Rico, and I did a few weeks in Colombia, which was amazing. Oh my God. Like, it was my first time in actually Central South America. I've never been to that part of the world before. And the impression that has left on me, I want to go back. I very rarely like want to go back to somewhere, like, not I do, but I'm not like itching to go back to a country twice, because I'm very much like, I like to go everywhere. Do you know what I mean? So I'm always on to the next country. Whereas Colombia, I'm like, I am dying to go back.
For what reason?
Oh, it's just amazing, honestly. Do you know what it is? It's like, I think some of it was like the novelty of just being in South America, because I'd been kind of wanting to go for so long. But do you know what's so interesting? And I actually do want to talk about this, is that a lot of people while I was out there, because obviously like I was posting on my Instagram and stuff like that, like my stories of what I was up to day to day, a lot of people were messaging me like, oh my God, is it safe there? Like, because there were some parts where I did solo as well. A lot of people were like, oh my God, I've heard really bad things. I've heard it's a no-go for tourists. But my cousin messaged me. She was like, sis, like, there's loads of kidnappings over there. You need to be careful, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh my God, like, guys, it's nothing of the sort. Like, it was so safe. Like, well, I'm not going to say it's like an absolute complete haven. Obviously, there's, you know, like, there's danger, but in the same way that there's danger everywhere in the world. You know what I mean? Like, and I feel like a lot of countries get a bit of a bad rap for like tourism, you know, and I feel that's the case, especially with like South America. A lot of people have this idea that like it's super dangerous, you shouldn't go there, especially you shouldn't go there alone as a woman, blah 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 blah. And it's not to detract from the fact that, yeah, sometimes there might be certain environments and circumstances that might be particularly unsafe for women or whatever, but also generally. And I realise I might not be best positioned to talk about this because I'm actually a bit reckless. Like, I am I am actually, like, unfortunately, I don't really have a sense of fear. But I genuinely do believe that that served me well, because I think that fear is something that can be sensed. Like, I'm touch wood, I'm not really someone that people would kind of, like, approach on crud, because I just... I don't know, like, if you're a bit sheepish and you're moving around a place a little bit, like, scared or, like, anxious or whatever, I do think people pick up on that. Whereas I'm always, everywhere I go, I'm always very confident, I'm always very, like, you know, strong and whatever,
and
steadfast.
And that's in no way to say to people that are like,
it's
that,
not victim blaming, exactly. It's not victim blaming, but it is a case, I've seen it before. Like, for example, when I went to Belgium, I went and I took, like, my little sisters and my little cousins. There was, like, six of us. And they're only a few years younger than me. And obviously, me being the older sister, I'm, like, keeping them all on a tight leash, whatever. And the whole time, we didn't have any problems. And then there was literally a two-hour window where three of my, like, my sister and two of my cousins separated from us. And literally, they're only a few years younger than me. They separated from me to go get their own food or whatever. And they come back and they've been heckled, like, three different instances. And I genuinely believe it's because I wasn't there. Do you know what I mean?
Do you think also in Colombia, do you think that you don't stand out that much? Do you know what I mean?
A lot of people do assume that I'm like... No, actually, people can tell I'm Indian. Well, this is another thing. Whoa. This is another thing. Everywhere I go, I'm always just racialized as Indian. Like, no one obviously knows, like, where Bangladesh... It's so funny. Like, It's so interesting traveling as like a visibly South Asian person across the world, because obviously like India has this kind of like cultural hegemony in South Asia, and anyone who's brown, they just assume is Indian. And like the kind of cultural references I get thrown at me are hilarious. The amount of times I'm walking and people are shouting namaste at me. I'm not even joking. They'll just be shouting namaste, or they'll be like India, India, just shouting at me. Like, I was in Germany a few months ago and I was in like this, it's this place called YAM. It's this African Arts Heritage Center. And literally, like, a man just walked behind me. He didn't even acknowledge me. He just walked behind me and just went, Indian. And just, like, went about on his way. When I was in Egypt and I went to the bazaar in Cairo, oh, my God. I guess Bollywood must have some kind of influence there, because men were literally in the middle of the square, like, stepping out to sing Bollywood to me. Like, it's insane. But actually, having said that, my racialization does kind of change, actually, depending on context.
Like, I think it's always going to be that case, though, isn't it? It's always going to depend on the actual people there and what they know.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's so true. But yeah, so like Colombia was completely safe, in my opinion. Like, obviously, don't put yourself in danger. Do you know what I mean? Like, don't be walking. The advice that I'm going to give, I haven't followed and I'm still fine. But obviously, if you're walking around at night by yourself, like, be vigilant. Don't be like flashing your phone about or your wallet about.
I think this is the thing. I think ultimately we shouldn't necessarily say to anyone, do not do this, unless there's a very obvious instance where you shouldn't be going anywhere. But I think more what we should be doing is giving people the advice that they need in terms of what they can do to make themselves most safe.
Right.
For example, my youngest sister went to Brazil for a couple of months to do a year abroad whilst at university. And she, within 24 hours of getting there, managed to, I say managed, I'm not saying that's her fault, but her phone was stolen. And then when my other sister went to visit her, they went to Carnival, and it's actually, again, it's like, this is what I mean about following the advice. And again, I'm not in any way saying that any of my sisters are in any way to blame for any of this, but it's like my youngest sister, who'd been there for a couple of months, was like to the other one, like, oh, like, I don't think you should wear that necklace out and about. Like, I don't think it's a good idea. The other sister ignored her. They went out, and I think someone literally with a knife tried to, like, cut it off, basically.
Yeah.
Which is obviously a very, like, distressing experience.
Yeah.
And obviously that, again, is to show that, and I've heard other people that have been into other places in South America that a similar sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I think it's all about kind of just knowing what to expect,
yeah, exactly,
and how to mitigate that.
How to, you got to be able, you got to be street smart. That's what it is. I think I am quite street smart. There was a similar situation actually with me though, when I was in Nairobi, where we had like a walking tour, and in an area, I think it was quite notorious for like chain snatching. And the tour guide, and I was wearing like a solid gold necklace, and the tour guide said to me like, hey, like put that away. Like, you know, that is kind of what the general travel advice is. When you're in that area, don't have like, you know, chains out or things, valuables out. And I didn't listen, and I did get chain snatched. But my takeaway from that was I didn't follow that advice. Do you know what I mean? Which is, and like, that could happen in London. If you're out in London or Manchester, wherever, even in the UK, if you're out at night and you're flipping, you know, waving your valuables in the air, there's a chance that it might get taken. You know, so it's the case everywhere. But I don't think that it should deter you from... I'm very much a big kind of advocate for... I don't think fear should ever stop you from traveling. You know, like, I think that, like, unless it's kind of like, I mean, I'm not saying like go to Ukraine right now, you know, like obviously, unless it's like an active war zone, like, you know, I don't think that, I think people should just go anyway and just be careful and be a bit brave. That's it. Be a bit brave and be careful.
Yeah. Just do whatever you can to, like,
just look after
that.
Yourself. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But don't be scared. Like, it's still... Because also, on the flip side, like, there's a lot of ethnic people, for example, that have warned me against going to certain places in Europe because of, like, the danger of racism, you know? And that's completely valid. I get it. But it's also, like, I'm not going to let that stop me. Like, if you can fight... if you can fight, I think it's fine.
Moving on. Can I have my phone, please? So I can, like, look whilst to get my head together.
But yeah, Colombia was amazing. The people were amazing. So nice. Like, I traveled around. I went to a few different places. And it's such a different vibe in all the different places that you go. It's so cheap out there, guys. The vibes are immaculate. There's so much to do. Like,
was the food saying?
I'm the wrong, once again, I think you've asked me that before, and I did say I'm the wrong person
So what even, were you like looking for like just like chicken nuggets kind of vibe then?
Carlos, did you see that that video that I put on my Instagram?
Which one?
Where, yeah, I support.
Yeah, exactly.
The one where me and Laura went to a curry house in Bogota.
It's ringing a bell.
Like, guys, you know them TikToks?
Oh, yeah, no, I did see that.
You know them
TikToks
that show you, that are like, you know, your desi friend.
Yeah, how long can you make it before having to...
Guys, in the space of like 2 weeks in Colombia, I went for curry 3 times. I went for curry 3 times. I'm one of those people where I am like, I think this might single-handedly be like the most Bengali thing about me, is that I can't live without curry and rice.
I think it's that probably in combination with your ADHD, like mixed together.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. Also very, because like, I'm a habitual eater and like I'm very picky with food. And do you know what? There's such a funny video where I did a tour one day, like this is when I was solo, and I did a tour. And as part of this tour, they include lunch, like a traditional like Colombian lunch, right? And I took a photo and I sent it to my friend, like the plate when it got to me, the plate after I was done, and all I had eaten from that plate was like a slice of plantain. But that's me, like when I say I'm very picky, I am very, very picky, and it is definitely like a neurodivergent thing. But
yeah.
The food is good in Colombia, you know, from what I heard, and it's very different where you go as well. Like the kind of Caribbean coast is very different to like inland, and then up in the mountains is different. So
I'm hungry now.
I'm hungry as well, actually.
Yeah.
God, I haven't eaten today.
Should we go home?
Bye, guys. Bye.
Well, whilst you've been out and about off Bad Vibes Island, I don't know if you've seen what TV show aired this week on Channel 5 regarding a certain, I would say, disgraced TV presenter. You're not aware of this at all.
The Philip Schofield thing. You said it yesterday on the group chat, but no, I didn't see.
Right. So to fill you in.
Right.
Philip Schofield.
Fill you in.
Okay. Now I really want to go home. Right. How do I come back from that? Right. Philip Schofield has had his own TV show, like series type thing. Well, I wouldn't say series. It's basically been a 1 week thing, I think. On Channel 5, Castaway, he's basically gone to Madagascar for, I think, 10 days. And basically, he's, like, living by himself. And he's got, like, a camera crew there, basically. It's basically I'm a Celebrity by myself. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's basically he's just gone to Madagascar.
When you said the Philip Schofield show, I thought you meant like a surviving Philip Schofield kind of expose.
Oh, no,
kind of
no.
Show.
Well, we'll get to that.
That's what I thought.
No, not any kind of expose or anything. Well, that's not to say that there is anything to expose before we land ourselves in it. But, no, it's Philip Schofield surviving on this island by himself. Like, obviously, he's got a camera crew there, so nothing bad was ever going to happen. But it's basically him, like, living on a beach, like, making a fire, catching fish, that kind of vibe. And I think everyone's just kind of the same mindset, really. Of just, first of all, Channel 5, why would you do that? Because it's the same thing as, for example, Matt Hancock going on I'm a Celebrity. Who is the other one? That's Nigel Farage. It's these people who have been publicly disgraced for things that are actually wrong. And we can say that because he's come out and admitted that what happened was, I think he got the quote here, it was unwise but not illegal. For those who don't know,
for God's sake.
Basically, it came out that Philip Schofield had been having an affair with
extramarital affair.
Yeah, an extramarital affair with a younger male ITV employee and lied to cover it up. And what makes this a little bit more questionable is the fact that he actually first met said employee when he was a teenager and was keen to get into the industry. And he said, what first started was like friendship and then it transitioned into this. But I think there's always that question mark over like if you meet someone and your first time meeting them is as a person in a position of authority over them with that clear age difference.
It is a clear kind of representation of power.
Yeah, like, regardless of what happens once it's legal, I think there's always that you met them.
The power dynamic is going to be present the whole time.
Yeah, like I don't think...
grooming, it is. Do you know what I mean? Like it's like you've met
in
someone...
In our opinion.
Looking at the definition,
yeah.
Yeah, you've met someone at like a young age and there is a clear power dynamic there. You have obviously exploited that to kind of solicit an inappropriate, you know, relationship with this person.
Like regardless of the fact that it's happened once things are legal, there's always that question mark over it. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think you're the type of person to watch Friends, are you?
No, I've watched Friends.
No, do you remember Monica and Richard in like the earlier seasons?
No, I don't. I've watched Friends.
Yeah,
Friends,
you know? Basically, Monica, you know, one of the main characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. The darkest haired one.
Yeah.
She, in the earlier seasons, gets into a relationship with a man named Richard, who is actually her dad's best friend, who she's known since childhood. He was like her doctor when she was young, thing. And they're in like a proper relationship. And the reason they break up is because he's obviously a lot older and doesn't want to have children. Mm. But that's besides the point. It's that kind of thing of like, he met her as a child.
Yeah. And also like as an adult, like I'm around children all the time. And like when children are like that much younger than me, I realize that even as they grow, I always see them as that little child. Do you know what I mean? Like even like my friends, like my, not even like, okay, not, I was gonna say like my own nephews and nieces, but like that's biased because they'll always be like babies to me. But my even like my friends' siblings, you know, like friends' houses that I've been going to when their siblings were like literal like toddlers or kids or whatever, and like they're grown up now, they're full on adult people. I still look at them as like, oh, that little kid that would be running around the house and whatever, you know. So it's not right.
I don't think this is to say that age gaps in relationship are necessarily anything for anyone to judge if that's what people want to do per se.
I think it depends.
It does depend.
We've had this conversation before. Like, I think you have to pass a certain age threshold first, you know? Like, I saw it the other day where, oh, it was a famous person.
I think I've seen this. Is it Red Hot Chili
Peppers? Yeah.
It's funny. Our Twitter's the same or something, maybe. Yeah,
probably.
Yeah, I don't know if we should say that this is definite because I haven't actually looked into this, but judging from what we've seen on Twitter, it's a photo of the Red Hot Chili Peppers lead, like, singer with his supposed girlfriend. Now, he's, like, in his early 50s and the girlfriend... the girlfriend is supposedly 19. And that is... I think someone quote-tweeted it saying, like, it is just kind of a bit like... You don't need, just because the limit is there, just because the age like of consent is there, it doesn't mean that it's like that's immediate.
That's
like,
it. Okay. Legality and morality are not always the same thing, and we've had this discussion before. And someone literally said if they put the age of consent to 12, we would see grown men with 12 year olds.
Despite the fact that it used to be 18.
Do you get what I'm saying? Yeah. And it's like in life sometimes you have to use your own moral discretion and understand that just because something is legal doesn't mean that it's necessarily right.
Yeah.
The age of consent is, you know, a 19-year-old is within the age of consent for maybe a 20 or a 21-year-old, not for a 54-year-old.
Yeah, I think it's the fact as well that just because someone crosses the age of consent, that's the point at which they're starting to actually explore their adult life and actually... A 19-year-old, unless they've gone through a certain amount of... I would say trauma. They can't have defined like their own sense of self.
Oh my god, you're a child at 19. Like, not to be patronizing to 19-year-olds, but like when I was 19, I was a kid. I'm 28. I still feel like a kid.
You're a young adult, but that's the fact you've literally just entered adulthood. You don't know what it is yet to be an adult.
Exactly.
So to then go and the first thing you do is like actually get into a relationship with a 50-year-old. I'd say that's not.
It's not right. It's not,
yeah.
In my opinion, it's just not right.
And
everything needs to be illegal for it to be a no-go. You know, like some people really need to exercise greater moral discretion. Yeah.
Anyway, that's why that's why so many people are so disappointed in Philip Schofield for what happened and the reason why I think he himself quit this morning. Mm. There was a whole fallout over that. I think people knew, but I think it came out properly beginning of last year kind of time. Anyway, now obviously he's had this show on Channel 5, Cast Away. I haven't actually watched it. But I just think, again, it's just like...
Just don't rehabilitate him. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was a big, massive scandal. Everyone and all... I don't remember seeing any kind of mainstream voice being like, no, actually, it's all right. Like, everyone was very much... Overwhelming consensus was that it's wrong. That should have just been the end of his public career. Do you know what I mean? I think that some things just shouldn't be rehabilitated.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
It's just as well, they know what they're doing. Like, I'm a Celebrity in itself is like very... I'm a Celebrity, Castaway. These shows like strip away everything to kind of make it clear that these celebrities are ultimately humans as well.
It's a very specific kind of show as well.
Yeah, which
I mean?
It like, can be a good thing when the celebrity hasn't been involved and stuff like this in terms of showing that ultimately we're all humans.
The premise of the show is to have audiences watch in and like really relate with him and to sympathize with him and to root for him. That's essentially what the premise of the show is. And it's not to say that he's completely undeserving of all human sympathy because of what he did. I'm not saying that anyone's beyond rehabilitation and redemption. I'm not saying that, but like
not in a public sphere
where then that leads them to be like celebrated in a sense.
Yeah,
you know?
I think there was one scene where apparently he burnt the names of his people who had wronged him and then ran and went skinny dipping. Which is this in itself, like, okay, interesting. But again, it's like kind of like very much from that, I get the sense that he feels that he's been wronged. And
right,
I'm just like,
right.
I don't think there's really any room to be like,
yeah,
to be like putting that out into the public. Like, yeah, it should, if you're going to put anything out into the public, it should be, I hold my hands up,
if
I'm
anything,
accountable.
Yeah, play
like,
the rehabilitation yeah, angle, if you're yeah, desperate to do it. Do you know what I mean?
Like, not like some kind of like, I'm still human too.
Yeah.
Here's my side of the story.
Yeah.
Like, again, pity me kind of thing. And again, like, that's not to encourage him to feel like any sort of ill mental health as a result of what's happened.
Yeah.
But it's not fair for him to like use his public prowess to then like try and rehabilitate himself, like, yeah. And I think I would argue Channel 5, I'm not a fan of that, the fact that you would give the platform
yeah,
to him, like, because ultimately you know that people are going to be interested in that, like, there's
yeah,
going to be
course,
a certain number of people that are going to be like, oh, like, let's get the latest on this, like, but it's like you have to weigh things up and be
yeah,
like, is it actually in the public's interest?
It's not, like, it's not, because also it's not that much of a deterrent, you know. It's this idea of like, we talk all the time about kind of like sexual misconduct, particularly when it's the perpetrators belong to a certain demographic, which is kind of like really rich white men, and how a lot of the times they kind of really get away scot-free. And the message that we should be sending out, especially the kind of like the TV entertainment industry, should be that, because that industry is absolutely kind of like fraught with kind of sexual misconduct allegations and abuses of power, etc. The message they should be sending out is that this kind of behavior is unacceptable, point blank period, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and then that will kind of have reverberations and resonances, you know. Other people who might be kind of displaying this kind of abuses of power might be like, oh my god, like, there's an example of someone who has really paid the price for something.
Yeah,
you know, I'm gonna not do that. Whereas in this instance, it's not acting as a deterrent. It's not. It seems like no lesson was learned. You
yeah,
know, that's what it feels like.
Have you watched that new series, The Perfect Couple?
Mm-mm.
No, it's got Shahid Kapoor's brother in it.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, was it on Amazon Prime?
No, I want to say Netflix. Maybe Amazon Prime. I'm not sure, but it's like 6 episodes. It's decent. I would say it's like worth like a watch if you're into that, like, murder mystery kind of thing.
Oh, yeah,
but basically, in that, there's this rich family, and they kind of have a number of like scandals, and you see kind of this their PR team trying to be like, okay, so here's how we're gonna spin it. Like, so it's actually, you need to say this, that, and I think it's just, I just think it's really like unfair that like people in these positions of power have, I mean, obviously there's so much unfair with people who are in that kind of financial position, but the fact that they have the money to be able to be like, okay, if this thing happens, that's not, we don't care about like the actual reverberations of what's actually what I've done that's wrong.
Right.
It's how we spin it so that yeah, I can continue as an entity, like,
right,
in the public sphere, like,
yeah,
like a product almost. Like, you're a public figure more than a human, ultimately.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Not a van. So
Yeah. Carlos is sorting out the camera. I'm useless. So I've actually, because of the mic not working, I've sat in Carlos's place today, and I am kind of notoriously useless at using all of these controls, actually. But Carlos has kind of small been instructing me a little bit on what to do.
I heard the small there, and I took offense to it.
No, I meant small. All I've did is press a button.
Very choice use of words, right.
No, what I did was small is what I'm saying. You know what I was thinking as well? It's so funny. Like, you guys don't see that at the start of every show, like, Carlos is, like, faffing around, kind of, like, running around, like, stressing, trying to get this right, trying to get that right. And you know that TikTok trend where it's, like, one person's, like, screaming, ah! And the other person's, like, ah!
Oh, is that the Olivia Rodrigo song?
Yeah,
like,
it's
yeah,
literally
we should make that. That's a
Carlos
good idea.
Is like screaming, yeah, like internally, yeah, running around, stressing, and I'm just here taking pictures and videos of myself, like,
literally,
da, da, da.
You were like taking selfies. I'm like running,
yeah,
running
in the background.
Like,
I know. Could you pass me this? Pass me that.
Right. You know what's funny though? Like, the past couple of weeks when you've not been here, obviously Simran actually was up in Manchester. Not last week, the week before. So we like recorded a couple of episodes together, and it was just funny because obviously, I feel like we can all agree that you are the most intellectual and well-spoken of the three of us. You can kind of offer that kind of insight. Well, so we literally ended up like talking about some of the most random stuff, which was fun in itself. But we were just sat there kind of like, we sat at the table for like a whole day, like trying to think of ideas of what to
say.
Talk about.
Really?
We just look, because I was working like throughout the day.
But I've been enjoying
home.
The clips coming out though.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's what I think. I think it's good that we do both.
Yeah.
But it was just funny, like we just kind of sat there like writing. It was like I was sat there doing my work and I was like, Simran, you haven't got a job anymore. You can sit there and like just write
ideas,
down ideas. Like just this A4 like notepad of just written in pencil as well. And it was just
what ended up coming out of it? What were the clips that we had?
Well, I won't go into it too much because we'll have to go and listen, but like it's basically what animal would you be in a fight? Like, what's the largest thing you think you could swallow?
Yeah.
Like, which was all related to stuff that was on social media, but it was just funny.
It's fun.
We offer versatility. That's the main thing.
We like to cater to everyone on the show.
But something else that happened whilst you were away gallivanting is I DJ'd for the first time.
My God, I was so jealous.
Well,
I was jealous of the show because my sister went to the show as well, and I was really jealous of that.
Well, I want to like give a bit of like context to this as well. Like, I'm hoping that like anyone who's wanting to book me in the future doesn't listen to this because they don't get any sense of like my sense of experience. Basically, 2 weeks ago, I think it was on the Friday.
I do love this story.
Yeah, it was on the Friday before the Arijit Singh concert, and we got a DM on Mango Masala from this account that basically said, hi, can you ring this number, please? And I was just like, okay, that's clearly spam, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, because no other context. I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
Then I happened to be checking our email as well, and it was the same message, but then in the subject line, it said, urgent co-op live a DJ gig. And I was like, this is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just ring this number and entertain things just to see, like, what happens. So I rang the number and the person picked up and it was a real person, not a bot, which was good to see. And basically, they were looking for someone to do a DJ set backstage at Co-op Live throughout the Arijit Singh concert. Just playing a bit of like Bollywood chill kind of music, that kind of vibe. And I don't know what possessed me, but I was just like, yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, like, the fact that it's a great opportunity.
Well, yeah, I know, obviously it was a great opportunity. I think that's the main reason. It was like, it was such like, I was like DJing backstage, like at Arijit Singh concert. Like,
I wonder why they, like how they came, like why they, like they picked us or how they came across us.
I think it must have been that they just like were searching like Manchester South Asian DJ like whatever, and then we must have come up, like, just because obviously it's like similar sort of fields. But literally this was Friday before the concert that was on Sunday, so I like hung up the phone on Friday afternoon and was like, right, so I've got 48 hours to basically, because for context, since we've been coming to like Pi Radio for the past 4 years, I've got used to like decks and stuff. Like, I know how to do the basics, but I've had very little experience in actually DJing.
Live DJing, yeah it's
and
different.
It's, yeah, and also me and Simran both bought controllers at the same time, and have, like, they've basically gathered dust. Let's put it that way.
Well, apart from after Simran's masterpiece.
Yeah, we couldn't continue. After that, like, we couldn't, like, she just put us.
She peaked.
Yeah, we were
she
never going to get any better than that. But, yeah, I had 48 hours, basically, to, like, prep myself. So, like, those 48 hours were a bit intense. But I would think it was all right. I managed to do it and then got there, did the set. It was very nice. It's called the Decibel Club.
Who was it? Like, people who bought, like, VIP tickets or
yeah,
something?
I'm very confused, to be honest, about, like, how it works. But basically, at Co-op Live, obviously, it's a massive arena.
Yeah.
And they've got, like, multiple kind of backstage club kind of things.
Oh,
like, there's, like, they've literally got, like, three different spaces. So they had different DJs doing different bits. But I was in this place called the Decibel Club, which is very nice. They have very nice food as well, which I got some for free.
Oh, did you get free food?
Yeah,
oh.
I was very happy.
I know you'd be happy.
Yeah,
like, Carlos flipping loves free food.
Yeah.
My God. So do I.
Yeah.
Like, everyone loves it, but
yeah, so did that. It was all fine. I think it was really nice way to kind of ease into it as well, because it was kind of just background music and it was like Bollywood, which doesn't really require that much like mixing into it. It's kind of like you can kind of just, as long as you do it sensibly, kind of just play one song into
and
the other kind of thing.
And you used to do mixes as well, didn't you?
Like, yeah, no. I this is the thing as well. I'm fully aware that I had not to like toot my own horn kind of thing, but I'm aware that I have the ability to do this. Like, I literally come from a musical background.
Yeah.
I've made mixes that do sound good, like, manually. So, like, it's just a case of transitioning and, transposing those skills, like, into actual DJing. So, yeah, it was all right.
And then I saw that you did Diljit Dosanjh as well.
Well, yeah, because, like, literally, to be fair,
they were happy with you.
Well, the people that offered it to me again, I don't think they were actually there, but clearly no one said this person was awful.
So they were like,
do you want to come out for Diljit next week? So I was like, yes. And obviously that was more of a different vibe. That was a lot more kind of like a lot more actual DJing, I would say, because it was like more Punjabi music based and a bit more like kind of that, which was again a cool experience. And like after the concert as well, people were coming in and it was a bit of like a party kind of vibe, which was cool. Like,
one of my sister's best friends danced at that concert.
Well,
she
like,
was
on
one
stage,
of Diljit's dancers.
That's cool. Do you see he brought out Badshah last night in London?
No.
People are annoyed, you know, because he brought out Ed Sheeran in Birmingham and Badshah in London. Manchester, Glasgow, no, we don't deserve it. Apparently.
That's Ed Sheeran's jokes.
Because you know how he brought out Diljit when he was in Mumbai, I think.
I love that though. I love Diljit. I love him.
Yeah,
I love him.
I do. I will say though, I've like, it's an interesting experience. Like, I think specifically DJing for a South Asian crowd, and even, dare I say, a Punjabi crowd, it's a very interesting, like, I got very used to, like, kind of what I kind of expected, but then it still kind of hit me in the sense that, first of all, like, people coming up and being like, oh, can you play this song? Which is, like, standard for people to do requests, but then also being like, oh, no, you need to play this song, like, it's the best song ever. And I'm just like, I'm just like, it's, I know that it doesn't fit like the vibe, and I'm just like, okay. And then also like people that would do that and then be like, oh, I should take over. Like, if you need any help, let me know. Like, I know this. I was just like,
typical.
They don't know that. They don't know that this is my second rodeo.
Yeah,
so why,
right. I'm a flipping experienced multi-award-winning DJ.
Saying this? And then also just a number of like drunk people as well that would just come up and just be like, like proper like feeling it, which is just like,
you know what? Maybe I couldn't handle it.
Yeah, but
I'll kick them out. I'll be, get out.
I think it depends on the location as well, because for me it was kind of just like I was on the ground in my own like kind of like, it was a box rather than a booth,
right,
if that makes sense.
Okay.
Because you know some places they'll have a DJ
set,
you can't access them. I think that would be nice.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, but it was just funny like to kind of get that.
Carlos's new era, DJ era.
And it was so nice to do that and get paid for it.
Yeah, like, it's so sick. When you said that, I was like, what the hell? I couldn't believe it. Like, it's amazing.
It was another reason why I just like didn't want to like pass it up, because I was like,
I don't know what could come of it.
Yeah, and I think for these two things to be my first DJ
it's
set,
amazing.
Yeah, and it's like now I can say, well, you know that X Factor clip where it's Rach and she's like, I can sing better than Madonna.
Yeah,
I was like, I'm DJing at Corp Live.
Yeah, so, no, literally, like it's such a good opportunity.
Because I think when people hear that as well, like everyone's like, oh my gosh, the arena.
There's
like
a certain standard that they think that you.
But they also think that I DJed in the arena. I'm just like, no, not
no,
quite,
you should
not
correct
quite.
Them.
Yeah,
correct
but I'll
them.
Let them run with it.
Yeah,
like, yeah.
Well, I mean, you did.
Yeah, but watch this space.
Can't wait to see what comes of it.
It's nice as well. Like I say, it was a really good experience and like really good environment to kind of test out stuff as well, like learn the ropes.
You know what?
When you're more background music kind of thing.
You know what the thing is? I think the lesson here is firstly, like have skills in your arsenal, because you never know what opportunities could present themselves that you could end up being able to say yes to because of the skills that you have. And secondly, when they do present, like say yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's such an important thing to be a yes person in life.
I think that's the thing, like, and it's something that I'm actually like, very proud of myself for, because I'm not like, I'm not an extrovert, ultimately. I'm, yeah. Like, I think radio is probably the most outspoken that I am. And then when this came up, again, I'm someone that's very, like, I don't deal well with last-minute change. I'm very, like, to the book. Like, I like to know what to expect.
It was quite spontaneous.
Yeah, so this was all spontaneous. And the fact that I said yes, went, did it, like, and I was
and
like...
And it went well,
like,
and
it's
you
got actually,
more opportunities.
And, like, people are surprised as well. They're like, well, I wouldn't have done that. Like, and I'm just like, you know what? I did do that.
That's what I mean. It's such... I think it's so important to be a yes person in life. Because now, look, like, do you know what I mean? Like, you got to say that you did it. You got the experience. If you want to DJ again, like, you've got something to show for it.
Daytime is dialed in, watch out.
You need to get Carlos in your next show, in your next festival.
Well, you know, they're so nice. Like, obviously, our son was literally, like, when we first met, he was like, oh, like, do you DJ? And, like, wondering whether we should get you involved. And I was just like, yeah, maybe next time. Like,
we do love
Dialed In. Let me develop a bit more of, like, an actual
Do they
ability.
Have another festival coming up?
Well, I don't know, because obviously they said...
it's winter now.
London is our last big one until 2026. So
why
they're doing something else for 2025?
Oh, they're doing abroad. They're doing like.
Oh, is that what it is?
Well, no. I remember when we interviewed them. They have stuff coming up abroad. I don't know if it's like festivals or something. But they've got something coming up abroad.
Well, we'll find out.
Yeah, we'll be there. I'll catch a flight. I will be there.
We won't have any issue doing that.
Honestly, I'll do it all.
Maybe they'll pay for us to go out.
Oh,
with
that would be amazing, guys. If you're listening.
Well. Moving away from good vibes and over to bad vibes, which you know we have to do. I think the first thing is, obviously, it's October the 5th today, which means in 2 days it will have been exactly a year since October the 7th, which was the date which there was the attack at the Israeli festival, which then... has led to a full-on year of what I would call genocidal war from Israel against the people of Palestine. And again, just to put a disclaimer out there, that's not to discredit any of the people that passed away on October 7th. That in itself is obviously a tragedy. No human life should ever be taken away. But I think... I think it's a bit kind of like 9/11, you know, in the sense that it's an act that was committed by a certain group, obviously both like Islamist groups,
I mean the context is a bit different. I think I would say.
I think it's more like the sense of like it's ultimately people have died and it's a bad thing, but. Like
there's a wider context here.
Yeah, like the number, like the number of people that then went on and died in like Afghanistan, for example, following 9/11.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Here, like
completely
this number,
disproportionate.
That's the thing. Like two wrongs don't make a right. Like one massive wrong.
Yeah,
after
what has happened
wrong,
is that this thing has happened, which you know the October 7th, like and I mean we have spoken about this obviously extensively kind of on the show, but kind of now coming up to the 1 year anniversary, which truthfully I never even thought that we would be here. Like I did not think that it would go on for this long, like, and I guess that's hope, you know. I had hoped it wouldn't have gone on for this long, but like unfortunately we have, and what we've seen is that kind of that genocide, truthfully, you know, like and that is kind of a legally kind of it's a legal definition, you know, like we've seen with the ICJ case and stuff like that. Like people are really, really kind of coming out now and really labeling it as that.
Well, to give some figures on where we are a year on, and again, just to again give this sense of disproportionality, and again, like we're no way saying that any life lost is not a tragedy, but you look at the fact that since October 7th, this is as of October the 3rd this year. There have been at least 1,139 people in Israel killed.
What was it again?
1,139 people in Israel killed, whereas there in Gaza, 41,788, including 16,500 children with more than 10,000 people missing. Furthermore, also over 700 people in West Bank dying, including 160 children, which again is again.
What we have seen is kind of like, as Carlos said, obviously what happened on October the 7th, like you can mourn the loss of like human life, right? But that in itself didn't happen in a vacuum. That in itself was kind of, you know, part of this larger context of settler colonialism from the Israeli state on Palestinian land and of the Palestinian people. But what we have seen is kind of Israel have taken this to completely like unprecedented levels of aggression to the point where it is now legally being defined as a genocide. The death toll is kind of unimaginable. It's unimaginable. And I feel like kind of as someone watching, looking in on this, at every single point, you think like, okay, this has to be the worst of it. It can't get any worse. It can't get any worse. And then the next day you watch the news and somehow they've managed to make it worse. They've managed to make it worse. And that's why I say, like, I never really had even thought that we would ever even, it would be this far along, you know? And now recently what we've seen is that they've extended their kind of like sphere of war and aggression and genocide. And now they're, you know, they've been carpet bombing Beirut and Lebanon. And I think the death toll in Lebanon has been like 1,000 people, you know?
Yes. So since the 23rd of September this year, over 1,100 killed.
In Lebanon.
Yes.
You know, and
whereas since 2023, around 50 people have been killed in Israel as a result of clash. I would say
with
clash,
Lebanon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. The reason that Israel give for their most recent, like, violence towards Lebanon, they say it's to return their own displaced citizens to the north of Israel, which obviously shares a border with Lebanon. To give a bit of like context on events that have happened over the past month or so, Israel killed Hezbollah's leader. They then did that pager and attack, which me and Simran were talking about. It was like an episode of Black Mirror, this kind of thing of like all these, like the fact that officials in Lebanon were then like collecting electronic devices, because it's like, how do you know what is like,
it's insane. Yeah. And this is what I mean. I feel like what we have seen throughout this past year, because obviously this is a lot of people are calling it the first live stream genocide. And really what we're seeing is kind of like the extent of human depravity, kind of beyond what would have been like imagination for me. You know, like I genuinely, like from all the imagination that I have, would never have been able to muster up kind of specific instances of like violence and aggression and depravity that we have seen Israel enact. Like, how depraved do you have to be to think of like, let's just blanket kill a load of people by blowing up electronic devices?
Yeah, like, well, and then to literally go on and now then invade Lebanon first by carrying out airstrikes on more than 1,000 targets, claiming that they were Hezbollah strongholds or military facilities, yet somehow thousands of people have died, thousands are wounded. And also the key thing as well that I think a lot of people are pointing out is whilst I think nearly... To this day, I think nearly 2 million people have been displaced from Palestine, I want to say. But that's within the space of a year. Within the space of like a week or a couple of weeks, Israel has displaced like over 1 million people in Lebanon.
That's insane, guys. Like, and the crazy, and this is, it's just, it's so disheartening because it's like, where does it end? Do you know what I mean? Because Israel, they've shown us that they'll just continue. You know, like they are moving the goalposts of what it is that they're trying to achieve. First, it was like they're trying to bring their hostages home. Then it was, okay, we're trying to, you know, destroy Hamas. And under this pretense, they've accused everyone of being Hamas. Now it's Hezbollah. You know, now Hezbollah is they've set their sights on Hezbollah. Like, it's just, it's not, they can't be trusted to bring this to an end themselves. Like, then there desperately needs to be some kind of intervention. And which is why, like, you know, Iran have retaliated. A few nights ago, they sent a number of kind of like missiles into Israel. And you know what is so interesting about this is that Israel, obviously, I guess, to kind of save face, they've since come out and been like, oh, Iran's attack on us has been completely a failure. It's been a complete failure because, you know, like civilians weren't killed and we're fine and we've all survived and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, that is their logic. Their logic of what is a successful kind of military operation is the number of civilians that have died. Like, whereas Iran are saying it was an absolute success because we managed to hit these like military bases and these air bases, you know.
It is the latest in a number of examples of them basically outing themselves.
They're outing themselves, exactly, like, exactly. But I can't, I don't know. I can't believe it's been a year.
I mean, like, every hour in Gaza, 15 people are killed, 6 of them being children, 35 people are injured, around 12 buildings are destroyed.
And the crazy thing is that people are still like, I you know what, in the beginning when it first happened this time last year, I might understand why people might have been a bit on the fence or why people didn't really understand the kind of context and the reality of, like, you know, Israeli aggression over the past 76 years and why they might have, you know, sided or sympathized with Israel. But I feel like now, after a year of as I say, this live streamed genocide, I can't understand how there's still people that are siding with Israel in this. Like, I don't get it. But, yeah.
I saw someone say as well that it does feel very much like, with all the Western support for Israel and everything else that's going on in the world, it does really feel like it's kind of like a war against Muslims.
I said this from the absolute beginning, literally the first episode that we had where we spoke about this, and I said, like, Islamophobia is absolutely the pretext for all of this. The way the West are responding, what Israel are doing, the kind of general consensus among public, the way that people are perceiving this entire situation, what this has done is really, really reveal kind of like that, you know, that sick spirit of Islamophobia that is actually globally resonant now because of things like the global war on terror and, yeah.
Yeah.
Great time to be a Muslim.
Like, even beyond human life as well, again in Gaza, this is as of September 2024, 60% of residential buildings have been damaged, 80% of commercial facilities damaged, 65% of cropland area damaged, 17 of 36 hospitals only 17 of 36 hospitals are partially functional. 65% of road networks have been damaged and 85% of school buildings have been damaged. What have schools got to do with anything?
Well, this is the thing, like their kind of excuse of like Hamas is absolutely everywhere, and under that pretext they've managed to literally destroy Gaza to the ground. This is the thing, this is like the really insidious thing about like something like genocide, right? It's not just like the act of killing a people, it's making sure that those that survive can't live a dignified life afterwards. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's really attacking every facet of Palestinian life and livelihood, you know? Like, it's like if they were to stop bombing tomorrow, could you imagine a Palestine that the Palestinians might return to? Like,
I've seen like desecrated stats on like how long, even if they were to stop, how long it would take to kind of rebuild,
you know, like they've desecrated that entire land, all the infrastructure, everything, you know. So no one will ever like, yeah, I don't know, it just will never be the same, you know.
Yeah, I suppose, like, what, like, a year on, I suppose it's just, I think this is the thing as well, that, like, we say a year on, but like it's a year on since things amped up, but people need to realize as well that it's
year
like
76 really.
Yeah, so I suppose it's just as it reaches 1 year, let's all think about how it's been able to reach 1 year,
yeah,
and why it's ever more important to continue talking about this, continuing doing whatever you can to like try and put a stop to it, or at least just if you feel a bit helpless, at least let's put it out there, like, to know that this is wrong. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think ultimately strength comes in numbers, and we might not be able to necessarily control the people that run our country, and I say control, I mean like democratically control, but
it's disheartening, but like the fight goes on.
Yeah.
You know, like we don't have the luxury of giving up at this point.
Or, yeah, or exactly.
Being defeated, because for as long as there's Palestinian life that exists on the land, like, you know, we have to be in solidarity with them.
Yeah. Right. A final thing to chat on today that I saw that I thought would be quite an interesting thing. I've always thought this. What? So it's recently come, I suppose it's kind of like a good vibes island, maybe.
Oh, okay.
We'll see. New laws effective from this week are going to ensure that workers receive 100% of their tips, gratuities and service charges without deductions.
Nice.
So the Employment Act allows employees to claim through tribunals if employees withhold tips, which will potentially lead to fines or compensation. It's expected that this change will return around £200 million to workers.
Wow!
Obviously then promoting fairness and transparency when it comes to tipping.
Oh my God, that's crazy. 200 million.
I've always thought...
That's a massive amount.
I've always thought it's mad, like, the idea of, like, taxing tips and stuff. And, like, or even, like, the fact that our workers can have, like... work people can have policies where they're like, oh, like, we'll collect it and then we'll delegate it out amongst the people, or, oh, no, I can't accept tips or whatever. I'm just like, if someone's done a good job,
they've literally earned it.
Who are you to say that, like, I can't just give someone money? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't like that. Like, sometimes as well, like, and it is... I've always not liked it, because sometimes you end up having to, like I end up having to give, like, cash tips, because it's like, I know if, you know, how they have, like, a, do you want to add tip on the, like, if you pay by card? Like, I don't trust that it's going to go to that person.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas cash, I don't know, they might pocket it. Do you know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah, but I want them to, you know
what
I mean?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. That's why I keep cash. They might pocket it. Yeah. But no, they've literally earned that amount, and like, it's theirs. It's their hard earned, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
and I don't think it's the same extent in this country to say somewhere like America. But I think initially the whole process of tipping started because
I thank them for like great service.
But also because their wages were actually put lower in the way that it was meant to kind of, tips were meant to bring it up to normal, like kind of thing. That's still the case in America, 100%. Yeah. But I don't know if it's that much here, but
yeah.
So
that's good. I'm glad that that's coming to that. I didn't think that would be something that the government would tackle, but I'm glad that they have, actually.
Yeah, it's reminded me, actually, speaking about this, and like, it's reminded me of, like, people being rude and stuff. I had such a weird experience last week.
Where?
I went to the pharmacy to pick up a prescription, and I think anyone who, like, uses a pharmacy in the UK will know that, I think for most people, it can be quite a stressful or stress-inducing experience.
Why?
Just because, like, I think it just takes forever a lot of the time. Okay, and, like, can kind of appear, like, a bit more disorganised, you know what I mean? Like, I think, yeah, I think it's a bit, like... depends on the day you go. Like, for me with mine, sometimes I can get there, say my name, and it's ready to go, cool, great. Sometimes I'll say it and I'll be literally waiting there for like half an hour, like, for them to actually do it, and it's just long. But I was like being my normal self, like, whatever. When said, I've got this prescription, went down and sat down, obviously waiting patiently for it to arrive, and there was a couple more people after me, and then this one person walks in and they, like, said their name or whatever. I wasn't really paying attention, so I was just kind of like, whatever. And I noticed that when the pharmacist went off to go and get their medication, there was some kind of interaction between them, where the pharmacist was like, oh, no, sorry, I meant, like, because I'm not sure about blah, 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 blah. I was just like, that's... I didn't really understand what's going on, but there was just something going on there.
Right.
Again, the pharmacist comes back, like, pretty much straight away with their prescription, which I was like, okay, good for them.
Must be
like,
nice.
Yeah, exactly. Like, good for them. And I don't know what they'd, like, what they were getting, but it was, like, a lot of, like, stuff, basically, in this, like, box. And the pharmacist, like, put the box on the thing. And then if that was the case, like,
what, like, quite poorly.
Well, I don't know about that, but like, if you were ordering something and someone put like a box of stuff on the table, what would your response to that be like? Like, what would you probably, what, just literally, like, not a trick question, like, what would you say?
What, if someone put a box on
the
table?
Yeah, yeah, no, if the pharmacy was like, oh, here you go, here's your stuff, and it was like a massive box of loads of stuff in it, like...
Nothing.
Yeah, exactly, or say...
Thank you, bye.
Yeah, or say if you were like, say even in your head you were like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to carry all of that myself, like, what would you say?
Oh, can you help me?
Yeah, or like, can you have a bag? Or,
yeah.
This person just looks at it, just looks at him, is like, I can't carry that. I was literally like, what?
Well, it's your medication. That's what you came
here
for.
Yeah, no, they were just like, I can't carry
it's
that.
It's like going to Sainsbury's, filling your trolley up, and then like, going to the cashier like, I can't carry that. What, ask for a bag?
Well, yeah, exactly. So I was just like, the fact that they said it like that rather than asking for a bag, that was the second thing that I was going to be like, that's a bit weird. Yeah. Like, what's going on here? And then I think the pharmacist was like, oh, okay, let me get a bag, like, sort of thing. Like, and they were like, the pharmacist then started like putting like all this medication in, which I was kind of like, given that it's like a busy day, surely you would like offer to like just do it. Yeah, exactly. Also, the fact that it came in a box anyway, what do you mean you can't carry a box?
Just take the box.
But anyway, this person was like not doing it, so they were just standing there watching the pharmacist.
Was that a man or a woman?
It was a man who was the customer, and the pharmacist was a woman. But,
interesting.
Yeah. And the pharmacist started putting this stuff in. And I think at one point she put it on the floor and was starting putting it in. And then it got to one point where she was like, oh, my back's like really hurting. Because she was like middle-aged.
Yeah,
she was like middle-aged. Like the age that you'd expect people
also,
to like
start having.
Also, that's not a
pharmacist service.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's not within their remit of kind of services that they provide to the public.
Yeah. But it's also like she was like, it's fully acceptable like for someone of that age like to like have like back pain or whatever. So she's like literally bending all the way down to like try and do this. And it was like the last few couple of like whatever this medication was, and she was like, oh, like, do you mind helping getting those last couple of ones? And the guy kind of like does it, and as he's doing it, says to her, oh, well, you should really be off sick if you can't manage that. And I was I literally said, excuse me, you're being very rude.
Oh,
like,
did you?
Yeah,
God.
I was literally like, what the, like.
Yeah, cause good.
Up until that point, I was kind of like, do they know each other? Is there some kind of, because he was being, also when he said about, I can't carry that, it was so blunt that I was like,
they might know each other.
Or maybe like, he might be on the spectrum, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, if someone's being that blunt, like, I can't carry that, I was like, okay, let me give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
But when it came to that snide comment about like being like, oh, if you can't pick up a couple of things off the ground, you should really be off sick. And I was literally like, what? I was like, you're being very rude.
What did they say?
They were like, well, I don't think it's any of your business. And I was just like, what?
I'm not gonna sit and listen to that. Like, it is my business.
Yeah.
Okay, cool, I've made it my business. Now what?
The pharmacist was like to me, thank you for saying that, because I was gonna say something. So they basically took the medication and walked out, and then afterwards I was literally like, what?
You know what? I always think, I'm not gonna lie, like, sometimes I see like people film these kinds of interactions where someone is like overly rude or aggressive or whatever. I think I've said it on the show before. Sometimes I just watch and I think, why can't that happen to me?
Yeah.
Why can't
they're lucky that it didn't happen.
Why can't a brute try me? Like, I really be watching people and I'm like, ah, oh, I beg, try me, I beg.
I wasn't trying to incriminate myself, but I was just like, I literally cannot sit here and watch
and
this person
to this,
actually
yeah.
be, it wasn't.
It's just like this crazy entitlement.
Was
beyond, like, this is your dad's pharmacy. Like, is that woman on your payroll?
Yeah.
Like,
and even then, like, wouldn't be okay.
Like, not basic respect. Some people just are mannerless.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? You're like, you move through the world sometimes and you realize, I've said it on the show before, sometimes you could tell which people have never been batted up in their life.
Mm.
And that's how they move, guys.
No comment.
That's how they move.
I think as well, I'm distracted by the padded up thing.
They were rude. They were mannerless.
They were.
Good for you for speaking up.
Well, I think that's the thing, because like being in a pharmacy, like I said, it's usually very stressful, and I'm so used to when I go there, because I do go there quite a lot, like for like, quite regularly for like asthma inhalers and other medication that I'm on and stuff. And like, I will often see, it's a place where you will often find people that are frustrated because maybe their prescription hasn't come through or this or that. And I often see people being a bit like, with the pharmacist. I'm just kind of
that
like,
must be hard for them.
Yeah. Which shout out to the pharmacist. Like, I don't think it's their fault. Like, I'm pretty sure it's not their fault. But with that, I kind of understand that sense of like, frustration, exasperation. Ultimately, people just want to be well. So
yeah,
I understand
that. Of course.
But what this.
But there's
just
a limit to everything, isn't it? Like, you can't just be taking anything out anyhow on people.
Yeah.
Like,
this was like another. Like, it was just.
The fact that you're ill is not really that woman's problem. Do you know what I mean? It's not something to take out on that poor woman. Like,
it
she hasn't done
just
anything.
Like. Nasty.
Yeah. And well, some people are actually just nasty. There are really nasty people in the
world.
This
is the thing. I think the thing that shocked me as well is I think we've got to a place now because of like cancel culture where I feel like people are quite like, they tiptoe around things a lot more. Yeah. Like, I think you're a lot less likely to come across someone who is being openly nasty because they know that if they get caught doing it, it'll come back to bite them. Mm. Like you're saying about the filming thing. And so I think that's why it just kind of struck me, like, I've not used to seeing people who are unprovoked just nasty like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was just like, who hurt
some
you?
Some people
like,
just have a nasty like, spirit, really.
Yeah.
They just have a nasty spirit.
Yeah. So that was
if
my...
I catch you.
Yeah. Watch yourself.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Right. Well, that seems like a good place to round things off.
Don't be nasty, be nice.
Yeah. What you got planned? You're going for Macca's birthday, isn't it?
I am very excited, although my mum, you know Asian parents, like my mum does this thing and it's so annoying where she doesn't tell me beforehand when she, because she doesn't drive. Well, she does drive, but she doesn't like to drive. She gets bad anxiety when she drives. So like, obviously we have to drive her around a lot. And she does this thing where it's like, she'll never tell you beforehand that she needs to go somewhere or whatever. And she'll just tell you on the day. Like this, she told me this morning when I was getting ready, can you take me Rochdale? I'm like, Rochdale's not exactly round the corner. Mm. And then she's like, oh, you have to pick me up in the evening as well. And I'm like, well, I'm going to be out. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? So flip, I might have to leave early, God knows, because of my mom. But the thing is as well, is because my mom has like quite bad like anxiety and depression and like she doesn't really go out that much. When she does go out, like you want to be able to facilitate that. Like I'd rather me cut my plans short if my mom could go out because she rarely goes out. Do you know what I mean?
None of your siblings available.
No,
I
don't
want
so
you to miss
annoying.
Out. I know there's karaoke tonight. I know
there is
karaoke. That means a lot to you.
These guys, they don't know what's coming for them. They don't know what's coming for
actually,
them.
Actually, maybe it's best if you do go and
oh,
pick
whatever,
your mum up.
Whatever. But yeah, now I'm excited. What have you got on?
I'm straight after this. I'm actually going out for a kind of joint birthday meal of me and my sister.
Oh, cute.
With my dad in town.
Nice. Where you guys going?
Hawksmoor. It's like steak.
Oh,
so
yeah,
it's really
nice.
Nice. Yeah, this
on
was...
your dad?
Pardon?
On your dad?
I presume
probably.
So. very nice.
What is better than a good meal? A free meal.
A good free meal.
A good free meal. Yeah,
very nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see you guys next week.
Yeah, we'll see. Do you know what to do?
Oh,
should
go
I just
on.
Let you?
Go like, on, turn that off.
Oh, well, let's
put it
wait.
Down.
I think you should schedule the music first, shouldn't we?
And then you put that down.
Well, you say bye and then play.
Bye, everyone. Then see you next play. Week. Thanks for coming. Bye.